Here's something I want you to sit with for a moment. Chaplains work at the intersection of some of the most profound human experiences that exist. Grief, fear, moral crisis, the kind of suffering that doesn't have easy answers. And at the same time, they work inside institutions that are increasingly asking hard questions about accountability, outcomes, and practice standards. That tension is real. And if you felt it, you're not imagining it. Now, most of us came into this field because of the relational side of it. The listening, the presence, the ability to sit with someone in their hardest moment and not flinch. That instinct is good. It matters. But good intentions and a steady presence on their own are not enough anymore. And honestly, they probably never were. What the field is asking of chaplains right now is evidence-informed practice. Knowing what the research actually says about the situations you walk into. Not guessing, not improvising. And that's exactly what this episode is about. We're going to look at the research tooling and knowledge infrastructure that CRN has built to support chaplains in the field. Specifically, how synthesized research resources are organized and how you can actually use them. No complicated jargon, no academic detour. Just a clear look at why this infrastructure exists and why it changes what you're able to do when you walk into a room. So let me walk you through what CRN has actually built here. Because once you see it, it makes sense quickly. At the center of this is something called the Research Briefs Notebook, a dedicated, structured space that houses two types of resources, research reports and research synthesis briefs. Those are related, but they're not the same thing, and the difference between them matters a lot for how you actually use them. Think of it this way. A research report is the source material. It might be a study on chaplain interventions in ICU settings, or a report on spiritual distress patterns in correctional facilities, or findings from end-of-life care research. That material is valuable, but it's also dense. It's written for researchers. It takes time to read, time to evaluate, and a fair amount of background knowledge to interpret accurately. Most chaplains in the field, between visits, between crises, between documentation, don't have that time. And that's not a failure. That's just reality. A research synthesis brief is something different. Someone, a researcher, a subject matter expert, a trained analyst, has already done the hard work of reading that source material, filtering out what's relevant, and distilling it into something usable. The synthesis brief gives you the landscape. It tells you what is actually known about a topic, where the evidence is strong, where it's limited, and what it means for practice. You're not starting from scratch. You're starting from an informed foundation. I like to think of it the way I'd explain a good reference library to a new colleague. Imagine you walked into a resource room and someone said, "Look, over here are the full journal archives, everything we've collected. And over here are the summaries our team put together so you can find what you need before you go into a difficult situation. The archives matter. You might need them sometimes, but on a busy day, in the middle of a hard week, the summaries are what keep you grounded and moving." Now, here's why the design of this infrastructure is important beyond just convenience. One of the core commitments in chaplain practice, and I'd argue one of the most important, is what we call evidence honesty. That means you don't invent what you don't know. You don't cite statistics you haven't verified. You don't overstate what the research actually supports. That's a guardrail that protects the people in your care and protects your own integrity as a practitioner. And it's genuinely hard to maintain when you're working from memory or from something you heard in a training 5 years ago or from a general impression of what research says. The Research Briefs Notebook exists, in part, to solve that problem. When the synthesis work has been done carefully, when someone has already read the literature and represented it accurately, you can reference those briefs with confidence. Not because you've suddenly become a researcher yourself, but because the knowledge infrastructure has been built to be trustworthy. You're not guessing. You're not improvising a citation. You're working from something solid. And that matters more than it might sound. When you're in a care encounter and something comes up, a grief response that looks unusual, a veteran describing experiences that pattern toward moral injury, a patient whose spiritual distress seems intertwined with something that needs clinical attention, being able to say internally, "I know what the research landscape looks like here," changes how you listen, how you respond, and how you make decisions about what to do next. That's not academic. That's field level. That's the whole point of building this kind of infrastructure in the first place. Let me be direct with you about something. Access to synthesized research isn't a nice to have. It's not an administrative perk or a credential building exercise. When it actually changes how you show up in the field, and it does, it's because it reshapes the quality and integrity of your presence in the room with someone who is suffering. That's what I want to unpack right now. Three connected points. They build on each other, so stay with me. The first is evidence-honest practice. Here's the problem it solves. Chaplains are frequently asked, by patients, by families, by colleagues, sometimes by their own internal narrator, to speak to what is known about the experiences they're witnessing. What does grief actually look like at this stage? What do we know about spiritual distress in people facing a terminal diagnosis? How do moral injury patterns show up in veterans returning from combat? These are not abstract research questions. They come up in real time, in hallways and at bedsides, and in crisis response settings. And here's what happens without grounded knowledge. Chaplains guess. Or they generalize from their own experience, which is limited. Or they default to the last training they attended, which may or may not have been accurate. None of that is malicious. It's just what happens when you're working from an incomplete picture, and the risk is that you start operating on assumptions about what a person should be feeling, about what their grief means, about what their spiritual crisis looks like, rather than on what is actually documented about human experience in these situations. When a chaplain has read a synthesized brief on grief responses, for example, they walk into a bereavement visit knowing the landscape. They know that the experience is non-linear, that there is significant variation across individuals and cultures, that certain presentations that might seem alarming are within the documented range of normal grief, and that others warrant closer attention. That knowledge doesn't make the chaplain a clinician. It makes them a more accurate witness. They stop projecting. They stop improvising. They listen with informed humility, which is a very different quality of listening. The second point is refer not treat discipline. This is critical, and I want you to hear it clearly. Chaplains do not diagnose. They do not treat clinical conditions. They do not counsel in the therapeutic sense. That boundary is not a limitation. It's a protection, both for the people in their care and for the integrity of the profession. But the boundary only works if you know where it is, and knowing where it is requires knowing enough about the clinical and psychological landscape to recognize when something is outside your scope. Think about what happens in a correctional facility. A chaplain is meeting with an incarcerated person who starts describing sleep disruption, hypervigilance, a feeling of being fundamentally changed by something that happened to them. The chaplain who has read synthesized research on trauma responses, not enough to diagnose, but enough to recognize a pattern, knows that this person needs to be connected to mental health services, not because the chaplain is making a clinical judgment, but because the chaplain knows enough to know that another professional must be involved. That's the refer not treat discipline in action. Or consider a crisis response scene, a community that has just experienced a sudden mass casualty event. A chaplain is moving through that environment offering presence and support. Synthesized research on acute stress responses gives that chaplain the conceptual map to notice when someone's reaction has moved beyond the expected acute response into something that signals a more urgent need. The chaplain doesn't intervene clinically. They stay in their lane. But they also don't miss the signal because the knowledge infrastructure has prepared them to see it. That's the difference between informed presence and accidental blindness. The third point is multi-faith credibility. This one is sometimes underestimated, but it matters enormously in the field. Chaplains serve people across the full spectrum of faith traditions, spiritual backgrounds, and worldviews, including people who hold no religious identity at all. That means the frameworks and language a chaplain brings into a care encounter have to work for everyone, not just for people who share the chaplain's own tradition or assumptions. Research briefs that are compiled without doctrinal bias, without privileging one tradition's framework over another, give chaplains exactly that. Neutral, inclusive language. When you're drawing on documented research about spiritual distress, or about the role of meaning-making in end-of-life care, or about the experience of moral injury across military populations, you're working with frameworks that don't require a person to hold any particular set of beliefs. That matters in a hospital corridor, when the person in the bed comes from a tradition you know almost nothing about. That matters in a jail chaplaincy setting where the population represents dozens of different spiritual backgrounds. Research-grounded language doesn't exclude. It opens space. And notice how these three points connect. Evidence-honest practice gives you accuracy. Refer-not-treat discipline gives you boundaries. Multi-faith credibility gives you reach. Together, they describe a chaplain who is grounded, appropriately humble about scope, and genuinely able to meet people where they are, regardless of tradition, regardless of setting. That's not an accident of personality. It's a product of preparation. And preparation in this context means knowing what the research actually says before you walk into the room. I want to name something that sometimes comes up when chaplains hear this kind of framing. There's a worry that leaning on research somehow distances you from the relational, intuitive, deeply human work that drew you to chaplaincy in the first place. I understand that worry, but I'd push back on it. Knowing the research landscape doesn't make you a technician, it makes you a more trustworthy presence. When you know what is actually documented about grief or trauma or spiritual distress, you stop filling that space with projection and assumption, and you start actually hearing the person in front of you. The research doesn't replace the presence, it protects it. That's the heart of it. The knowledge infrastructure CRN has built, the research briefs notebook, the synthesized briefs, the carefully represented findings, exists to make this kind of practice possible at scale. Not just for chaplains who have years of experience and deep personal libraries, for every chaplain who is walking into a complex situation and needs to be grounded in what is actually known. That's the field-level case for why this infrastructure matters. And now, let's talk about how to actually use it. All right, we've covered the why and the what. Now I want to leave you with something you can do tomorrow. One habit. Not a system overhaul, not a new certification. One concrete practice that you can build into your work, starting with your next complex care encounter. I'm calling it brief before you enter. Here's what it looks like. Before you walk into a care encounter, especially one involving a situation that is complex, unfamiliar, or high stakes, you pull a relevant research brief from the knowledge infrastructure. That's it. That's the habit. But let me walk you through what it actually means to do it well, because the value is in the execution. Step 1. Identify the situation type, not the person, not the outcome you're hoping for, the situation type. Is this a grief visit, a trauma response, an end-of-life encounter, a moral injury conversation with a veteran, a crisis response in an acute setting? Name it as specifically as you can. That's your search term. Step 2. Locate the relevant brief in the research brief's notebook. Find the synthesis on that topic. You're not digging through raw journal archives. That's not what this moment is for. You're going to the distilled, field-ready output that someone has already prepared. Read it, not to become an expert, not to load up on talking points. Read it to orient yourself, to know the landscape of what is actually documented about this kind of experience, what the range of responses looks like, and where the edges of your scope are. Step 3, and this one is critical. Note what falls outside your scope, and who should be looped in before you go in, not after. If the brief surfaces patterns that signal clinical or psychological needs, you identify the appropriate referral pathway before you're in the room. Because once you're in the room, in the middle of a real human moment, that's not the time to be figuring out who else should be involved. You want that map drawn in advance. What you're building with this habit is something I'd call informed humility. That's different from improvised confidence. Improvised confidence is when you walk in and work from whatever you happen to know, your experience, your instincts, your last training. Informed humility is when you walk in knowing the landscape, knowing your limits, and knowing what to do when you reach the edge of your lane. One of those postures serves the person in the room. The other serves your own comfort. I want to end with this, and I want to say it plainly. The chaplains who last in this field, who earn sustained trust from the people they serve, from the institutions they work inside, from the colleagues they work alongside, are the ones who know what they know and know what they don't. That combination is rarer than it sounds. It takes discipline, it takes honesty, and it takes infrastructure that supports you in telling the difference. CRN's research tooling is built to do exactly that. Use it. Brief before you enter.